Hello everyone, this is Hackspace's Signal, and we're in for the second part of the show tonight. Tonight is the second week, as you might have already been mentioned before. And we're still pretty beta. Nevertheless, we're going to give you another show of information on intelligence, also known as Room IOI. My guest tonight is Christian Riley. He's only 2 hours away from Vienna, but still, he's going to be calling in via Skype. So sorry about probable delays or lossy MP3 streaming. Hi, Chris. Are you there?
Yeah. Thank you very much for inviting me on the show. Sorry I couldn't be in Vienna. two hours is close, but it's
far enough.
It's far enough. Yeah.
And we're streaming pretty late at night, so I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the problem is Austria is a wonderful country, but the trains don't like running at night.
Very true. So where you come from, the trains do like running at night?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm used to. I worked eight years in London. I'm used to getting a train at 2 o'clock in the morning without worrying about it. In London, it's pretty good. If you miss your train, you miss your last train at 3 o'clock in the morning. If you wait 2 hours, the morning trains start. So it's not so much of an issue. So I'm still getting used to Austria. It's only been 3 years. So I still kind of wake up on a Sunday morning thinking, I should go shopping. Oh, wait a minute. No, everything's closed. So.
Right. The time will come, I'm sure.
Sure.
So you mentioned you've been living in London. I guess not everyone on the show is familiar with what you do or with your name or your job or even your blog. So what do you actually do?
Well, my day job, I work as a penetration tester for an internal penetration testing team for a bank here in Austria. We call ourselves a CERT. We're a member of the FIRST, the Forum of Incident Responders and Security Teams. But the main focus that I have within that team is internal penetration testing of bank systems and client systems and things like that. So that's what I do as a day job. In the evenings, I don a cape and do kind of blogging, Twittering. I also do a podcast called the Eurotrash Security Podcast. I fly around the world to conferences as much as I possibly can and blog about them. And I write those blog entries on my blog, which is, shameless plug, blog.c22.cc.
So catch22.cc.
C22.cc.
Right. Yeah. Sorry.
That's fine. Yeah, catch22 was already taken, I'm afraid. Seems to be a popular thing. Yeah.
Why is that?
Well, there's a band called Catch-22, and there's a book, which apparently is quite popular, called Catch-22.
Apparently.
Yeah.
So I think we're going to get to the conferences later still. I guess a lot of people that are listening in for Room IOI are in the security infosec kind of scene, maybe penetration testing, maybe just getting into it, maybe just being interested in what the scene is all about. Since this is a Hackerspaces Signal show, I guess most of the people are from within the Hackerspaces scene, but not so much from the security scene. How would you describe your way of getting into this scene or starting to be a penetration tester? I assume you haven't been for all your life.
No, definitely not. I mean, it's tricky. I mean, a lot of people have asked me how they get into the industry, and it seems to be kind of a popular thing now, which kind of has its good points and its bad points. But you see quite a lot of people coming straight out of school, doing maybe kind of a couple of years of college or a university degree, and then sending you a CV and saying, I'm an ethical hacker, you know, I can do this. And it's like, as far as I'm concerned, you know, if you haven't worked as a web developer or a network administrator, or you haven't done a normal IT related job, then, you know, you don't yet have the experience that's needed. And people tend to want to jump into this career as soon as you can because it's cool and interesting, and you'd say, wow, look, I'm a hacker, I hack people's systems for money, you know? And it is cool and it is great, but it's not the kind of thing you can jump into head first and say, well, I've read 3 books and therefore I can do this.
So would you say you consider yourself to be a hacker? Do you use this term?
I mean, yeah, I do, but mostly because people understand the term. not because I think that that's what I am. I mean, since I was a kid, I always used to play around with computers, try and make them do things that they didn't want to do. You know, from the real basic stuff, like, you know, you get your Commodore 64 and you want to copy the games, so you find a double cassette recorder and you just copy the game across, and then you find out they've put copy protection on there, and then you try and get around the copy protection on the tapes by blanking out certain areas it was sellotape and things like that. Just and then kind of moving on to, you know, going down to your local library, grabbing they don't exist anymore, but grabbing kind of magazines that used to come out once a month with games written in them in basic code.
You know, that you could just type down on your phone.
I mean, I'm dating myself seriously here by saying that, but I mean, I used to spend hours and hours just typing them in and figuring out what they did and changing them, and then immediately going back and changing it so I had infinite lives and nothing could kill me.
Remember the time when they didn't have the line checksums yet? Where you would type down the whole program and had no clue where the typo was because it didn't have the checksums.
Oh yeah, I still remember, and this is really embarrassing. I don't tell people this, but I guess it's time to out myself. It's like the first time I ever wrote one of these programs from a magazine, I wasn't very experienced with coding, should we say, and I'm still not. I'm not a coder. I didn't know that at the end of each line you pressed enter, so I just kept pressing the space bar until it got to the next line.
Okay.
So after 3 or 4 hours of typing this, it just came up and said error line 1. Because everything
was line 1, yeah.
That one took me a while to figure out. But after I figured that one out, I never did it again. So.
Well, this is how you learn, right? It is some sort of right jumping into it.
Yeah, I still remember the time where I got my first MS-DOS system. It was like a 8086 system with, you know, almost no RAM at all, and there was an internal hard card. It wasn't a hard disk, it was an ATA hard disk on an ISA card. And I remember starting it up and looking at it and going, I don't know what these files are, I don't need them. And I immediately just deleted all my MS-DOS files. Which is fine until I rebooted, and then nothing worked anymore. But you find that you learn most when you break things. I mean, if you install a program using apt-get nowadays and it just works, what did you learn by installing that program? Nothing. You learn how to
type faster.
Yeah, how to type apt-get. You know, next time you remember to type sudo before you type. But I mean, I still remember the days where if you didn't know how it worked, and you didn't know how to install MS-DOS, and you didn't know how to install Windows, and then as soon as Windows broke, you didn't know how to fix it. You know, it was Windows 3.11 or 3.1. You know, if you didn't know that you had to install a TCP/IP stack on Windows 3.11, then you weren't going to get any kind of networking, and you were never going to get on the internet. You know, WinSock was a terror. Never worked.
A bitch.
Yeah, exactly, but it's not like that anymore. I kind of miss those days. I miss the days where, you know, you could spend an entire day just pissing around with your computer to get it to do one thing, one minor little thing. It's like, I just want to get TCP/IP working and send a ping to another machine.
I'm so tempted to go into OS Wars right now again.
Yeah,
I won't.
Yeah, I miss those days. I mean, I just like to play with things and get them to do stuff that they don't want to do. And if I try and do something on a machine, I get very, very focused on, you know, I try and do something, it doesn't work. I want to sit in front of that computer until it does what I need it to do. And my girlfriend hates it. You know, she comes in at 3 o'clock in the morning. Are you coming to bed? Yeah. As soon as I get this doing this, I'll come to bed. And it could be like 20 hours. I'll just sit there and just keep doing it and doing it and doing it. I mean, a classic one I had was, I couldn't figure out why my iPhone, you know, I'm sad I have an iPhone. I couldn't figure out why my iPhone didn't support SOX proxies, because I wanted to use an SSH tunnel, SOX proxy, everything. So I jailbroke it, couldn't find a way to do it. I got it to do SSH from the command line, that's not a problem. I got it to do port forwarding from the command line, mm-hmm. so that I could, you know, I could theoretically use a SOX proxy, but mm-hmm. there was no way I could get it. So I spent ages getting this local proxy, 3 proxy, running on the iPhone so it would run an HTTP proxy and then forward everything through a SOX proxy through an SSH tunnel. And the second I got it working, I wrote a blog post on how to get it working. Never used it since. Ever.
But that's not the point, right?
It's not the point. I didn't care. I didn't
did
want to use it.
Get it to work.
I just wanted to be able to say, it works. I can do this. And I mean, if that's a hacker, then yeah, I'm a hacker. If that's just someone who likes fucking around with computers, then I'm just someone who likes fucking around with computers.
So probably just to mention it again, where would anyone who would like to look into that kind of code or getting around not being able to use SOX proxies on his iPhone find the description?
Yeah, if you go to c22.cc and search for iPhone SSH, and there's a walkthrough. I haven't looked at it since I last wrote it, and it's based on the old firmware. It's 3, not 4, so maybe in 4 they've finally added SOX support, but I doubt it. It's one of those messy things where you have to do so much on the command line to get it working. It's just not even worth bothering with.
Honestly,
I was just being lazy because I didn't want to set up a VPN box. But to be honest, the amount of hours I put into getting that working, I should have just set up a VPN box.
Maybe not. Maybe this would have been just too easy.
Yeah.
And you would have had hours with no clue on how to spend them.
Yeah.
So, fast forward in your life. We've been at you probably being 6 or maybe 8 years old.
Yeah, I haven't got very far in my career. I did the usual stuff at school. When I was at school, learning about computers was taking a business class because they were the only people who had a computer. So I learned kind of the accounting stuff and how to set up a limited company in England, which is really, really not incredibly helpful. And it was basically like a green screen thing. My school weren't particularly well renowned for their computer stuff. And I left knowing pretty much nothing that I didn't learn at home on my own. Went to college, did the usual kind of theoretical stuff, Boolean algebra and a little bit of C programming and things like that. I was really, really deeply into programming at the time. I really, really liked C programming. And like a week before I finished college, I went to my professor and said, I want to do C programming as a career. This is really good. I really like it. What do I need to do? And he said, you need a degree in advanced mathematics. So I threw away every C book I had, completely forgot about it, and moved on to doing network stuff. So
that was it. No advanced mathematics.
I liked maths, and I'm reasonably good at maths. One and one, it's two. See, stuff. But I didn't want to.
Can you prove it?
I can't prove. No, that's the thing. So I couldn't prove that one and one make two, but I can tell you that one and one makes two. So you just have to believe me on that one.
Believing a pen tester, huh? Security people in general.
You can tell the truth sometimes. Only sometimes.
Yeah, you couldn't really tell when.
Yeah. Yeah, so I kind of skipped the whole programming thing, and I regret that. Nowadays, there's been many years where pen testers could kind of hide what they did. Well, not really hide what they did, but they could convince people that what they were doing was a black art. There was a whole period of time where there were no tools, and if you couldn't write your own tools, then...
You were lost.
And then there was a long period of time where there were a lot of tools that kind of worked, and no one really knew how they worked, and pen testers were using them and saying, oh, no, this is all secret stuff, it's all really, really complicated. And
This is where it gets really handy to get things working, because you read through them and try to figure out what they actually do, right?
Exactly. And I'm only really starting to get back into that. I mean, I've been doing the ScriptKiddie pen test thing for a long while. I mean, I'm not a proud person. I'm quite happy to say that, if there's not an exploit in Metasploit, then I'm not going to write my own exploit for it. But that's not where what I've been doing has been heavily focused on exploit writing. What I've been doing is more kind of, typical pen test stuff. You want to know where the holes are before the people attacking your system knows where the holes are. If you're looking at a system and, it's an important system for your company, and you find that there's information disclosure, and there's bad error handling, and it's supporting unsecure SSL ciphers, and there's an old version of this software, and through that you can upload a shell and access the remote system and run commands on it. That's all really important stuff without actually ever having to write your own exploits for it. But now it seems to be what everyone wants. People don't want vulnerability scanning anymore. thank God, because you know, hopefully people have got beyond that point where, you know, they're paying some company 50,000 euros to do a Nessus scan and then give them the report and go, there you go, we did a pen test. Thank God, hopefully those days are coming to an end, because people actually understand what these tools do now.
They're really, really getting more easy to use by the day. If we just look at, say, Metasploit Express, where you get the whole UI interface and everything, like any, I guess, mildly computer-related person can run these scanning tools or exploitation tools these days.
Definitely. I mean, there's Metasploit Express. Core have had an enterprise version of their Impact product, which is basically the same as their Core Impact product. Core Impact is like a version of, you know, kind of like Metasploit. It's an exploitation engine. It gives you a shell and it does, you know, various, you know, port scanning and things like that. And it was, you know, really point and click, easy to use. They released then a management version of it that did the same thing, tells you that this system is exploitable by actually exploiting it, but then just doesn't give you the shell. It always seemed kind of pointless to me, but I mean, they made money out of it, and you know, and it's a good product to give to someone who you don't really want to get a shell on those machines.
Don't trust that much.
Well, exactly, but I mean, as far as I'm concerned, when you get shell, I mean, that's not the end of the test. That's where the test begins. I mean, if you get, you know, 15 IP addresses and you're testing 15 web servers or, you know, DMZ systems, and you get shell on one of those systems, you don't just scream, I'm finished, and walk off. You know, you actually then do some post-exploitation. What can you find on that system when you get access to it? Mm. And that's where you're really kind of adding value to the penetration test, because you're not just saying, I can exploit the system. You're saying, I can exploit the system. And once I've exploited it, your SSL keys are lying, you know, available for anyone to download, which means I can now spoof, you know, all of your web servers. You know, I can spoof your web farm because your key is a wildcard key, you know, so you've got star.company.com, and then I can then spoof every single domain underneath your company.com domain. And then from there I can hack your password on your local machine, because it's only, you know, it's not well encrypted, or it's, you know, there's notes on your desktop that give information about other systems. And that's the kind of stuff vulnerability scans are never going to find. They're not that advanced. They can tell you there's a vulnerability there, but they can't tell you what can happen if someone gets access to your system.
So in this time before these more or less automated, completely automated tools were around, you were mentioning that there were groups of, you know, hackers that were very shady about how they wrote their own tools, what they used, how to get them running. I'm wondering, did you meet any of these people in London back then? I mean, was there a group of something hardly, but still kind of comparable to a hacker space in the sense of, you know, Cult of the Dead Cow or something like
that? The problem is, I at the time when I was working in London, I was working as a network administrator, so I wasn't really involved heavily in the security scene. But I mean, there were groups around doing that kind of stuff, but they didn't really advertise, as you can imagine.
This is not the kind of way you grew up with computers, being in a group. So you were.
No, I grew up doing it all because I was interested in doing it, and doing it all privately. I mean, all my friends weren't interested in that kind of stuff. You know, I don't have any friends from back home in the UK that I could talk to about computers. It was all just stuff I learned because I was interested in learning it. You know, I used to go down to the library and just grab a book about a random thing and just read it, just to understand how it works. But as a network administrator, I kind of got a lot of background skills on how networks function, you know, how domains are working, you know, trying to tie together Unix systems and Windows systems and trying to kind of keep them all patched and secure. And as boring as that was at the time, and I found it incredibly tedious at points, it gave me a good grounding when I finally did move into security. When I moved to Germany for a while, I was doing server support and security stuff. And when I started to move into security, I started to realize all the stuff that I really had learned when I was a network administrator. You know, all that boring stuff that I thought was just, oh God, not this again. It gave me a good grounding where I could say, well, yeah, I know how this all fits together, so I know where these vulnerable points are and I know how to change them. And that was kind of the point where, like, kind of my eureka moment, where I said, okay, wow, this is what I want to do for a living. You know, you use all the boring stuff, you know, that I learned to do really cool stuff.
So it kind of sounds as if that was not a planned move of going into security, but rather combined with, you know, you got this job, and by chance, they would put you into a position where you'd also have to deal with security issues.
It was purely by chance, because I was working. I met my girlfriend, who's Austrian, and I was working in London at the time. And flying between London and Austria was a bit of a pain and a bit expensive. So I had this amazing idea that I would transfer to the office in Munich, which is, as far as I was concerned at the time, really, really close to Austria. You know, 6 hours drive away is better than a plane flight. So, you know, that's what I did. I moved over to Munich, and they put me in doing server support stuff, the same thing I was doing in the UK. And one of the first things they threw at me was AV. You know, but they wanted it all virtualized. You know, we need like AV servers for the server AV and AV servers for the DMZ, and we need this all virtualized. And I was like, but these are all on the same system. That's just stupid. You know, it's, you know, different kind of security levels, and these are all in different networks. And why are they being virtualized? And no one could really come up with a great idea, you know, great reason why this was all being done, other than, well, someone said virtualization was cool.
And it sure was believed to be so for
to be, yeah,
years.
Well, at the time, it was kind of like, well, virtualization, that's bulletproof. As new technology is, no one's broken it yet, therefore it's completely secure.
Oh, definitely.
Oh, yeah. It's always the way with new technology. Until someone breaks it, it's secure. But, you know, as far as I was concerned...
When you raised your voice for the first time? And...
Yeah. I mean, I remember writing, you know, drawing this kind of huge network diagram with firewalls and connections coming out of it, and standing there in front of our IT manager saying, this here is a huge issue, and him going, I don't see the problem, just go and do it. And, you know, so, okay, dutifully, I went off and I did it. And I started moving more into kind of vulnerability scanning, just kind of automating some, you know, Nessus scanning and various other, you know, security-related stuff, doing, you know, snort IDSs and things like that on server farms. And it was really fun. You know, but what really bugged me in the background was that I'd set up like a snort sensor, mm-hmm. and I'd say, okay, where do you want these alerts sent to? And the answer that I'd usually get from these people would be, well, I don't care. Just send them wherever. It's like, well, just create a mailbox and send them to the mailbox. Like, well, yeah, okay. Well, who's gonna get the emails from these mailbox? Oh, we'll check them once a week, once a month. That's stupid. You need to be getting these things live. You mean, this is an intrusion detection system. You know, surely you're actually paying attention to this thing. And they're like, no, it's just in a contract that we need to have one. It doesn't say that we need to have a certain service level agreement.
Right.
And it just drove me crazy. And it drove me to the point where I knew I wanted to do this for a living. I wanted to work in security, but I just didn't want to do it with this company. So I quit the job. I actually took 6 months off. I had some bad neck problems, so that seemed like a good idea at the time. You know, too much working on laptops and neck injuries and stuff. So I took 6 months off to kind of recuperate, and I ended up spending most of that time reading books. Finally finished taking all my MCSE exams, because it seemed like a waste not to take them after working with Microsoft for so many years. Mm. And took possibly the world's worst ethical hacking qualification. the EC Council certified ethical hacker.
Oh, wonderful.
Oh, God. That was the worst course I've ever done in my life. Halfway through the class, we get to this section on Linux. And the teacher stands up and he goes, well, we're going to go over this one quite quickly because I don't know Linux that well. And I'm just thinking,
so which
wait.
Year was that?
This was 2008. No, 2007. End of 2007. So it was like October, November 2007. And so we kind of skimmed over Linux really quickly, and I had so many questions that he just couldn't answer, and it was just annoying me. And then later on we come to the web section, and SQL injection in particular, he goes, well, we're not going to do this section. I'm like, why is that? Because I don't know SQL.
Oh my God.
Like, well, I know SQL. I've worked as a DBA. I've done some Oracle stuff. I've done some Microsoft SQL stuff. And he was like, oh, well, do you want to run through it? I mean, I'll run through it. So I kind of stand up, expecting him to sit down and maybe learn about SQL so that he can teach the students next time. Mm-hmm. He walks off and gets a coffee while I teach the SQL injection. And that just, it was like, it just struck me, this whole qualification was purely set so that they could get money. They didn't care about educating people. This qualification was just a joke. You know, at the time, the version that I took was just a complete waste of time. Mm. You know, it was 2007, and they're teaching you about ping of death. You know, it's, thanks. You know, like retro hacking tools 101. And I'm not sure if it's any better, because I think it's two versions on now. But the public opinion of the EC Council's certified ethical hackers, I don't think, has improved very much. But so I took this qualification, and then I started looking for jobs. And I, luckily enough, found something very close to where I live in Seattle, which is pretty strange, really, working for a bank in the middle of nowhere. I think we class the Wood Quarter as the middle of nowhere. And I was their first penetration tester, so, yeah, there was a steep learning curve.
So I how many of you penetration testers are working there now?
We have 4 penetration testers working there now. So
that's from 0 to 4 within, say, 3 years, maybe 2 years?
Yeah, pretty much, which is pretty good. I mean, it's gone from what we were doing at the time is when I first came in, you'd go to people and say, well, we've been told to penetration test this system. Mm-hmm. And they would obviously have the question of who the fuck do you think you are, followed quickly by, and exactly what is a penetration test, followed by, you are not putting that anywhere near my system. And then finally, when you did get tests done and you kind of turn around and say, well, this is all the stuff that's wrong, they'd immediately jump down your throat like, who the hell do you think you are saying stuff's wrong? But it's you expect that. These people in every company, no matter which company you're working for, no matter which country of the world, no one likes it when you turn up and tell them that they're doing it wrong.
Of course not. And so I'm do you think the situation has kind of globally improved, as in not only just at your workplace, but...
Oh, it's, but don't get me wrong, this isn't just a sysadmin or a developer problem. I mean, the first year I went about my penetration testing so badly. I mean, not from a technical point of view, although I'm sure that was pretty bad as well in my first year, but from a organizational and how you talk to people, how you communicate with people. My communications in the first year, not only because of my German issues, but because of, you know, the fact I didn't know any better. You just turn up and go, look, these are all the things you're doing really badly. Fix them. And they turn around and go, what? You come out of nowhere and you tell us we're crap. Of course we don't like you. You know, and no one wanted to call you back because, you know, no one was interested in that. And you learn quite quickly there's a way you tell people that things are wrong, and there's a way you describe things. And you have to kind of put it, I mean, it's better known now, as you need to put things in a way that they understand.
Mm.
And in a way that they actually take it on board and do something about it, instead of just taking offense. Because as soon as you offend them, they're not interested in helping you. And no matter what you want, they don't want to do that, even if it helps them as well. Because you've offended them and they don't want to do anything that could possibly help you. So
probably one more thing that you would have to learn in a very steep learning curve as a penetration tester is socializing with your actual theoretical workmates.
Not just that, but it's very hard as a pure techie, someone who isn't interested in politics. I'm not interested in how, you know, different departments interact and how internal cost codes function and things like that. I don't give a shit. I'm sorry. I don't care who's paying the bills. Just tell me what I need to test. I will break it and write a report for you. As someone who just really doesn't care about any of that kind of stuff, you have to appreciate that the most important thing about penetration testing, depressingly enough, is the report and the presentation. Doesn't matter how good your technical skills are. You could hack into any single box in the world. But if you can't write down how you did it, you can't present how you broke into that system and how they can make it better and fix these issues, then you're not worth anything. And I learned that very, very quickly.
So another thing to add to qualifications or courses you mentioned previously, what would you consider to be the best course you ever did? Like something you would probably recommend to other people that are getting into this kind of job?
I mean, I'm quite popular with SANS classes. I quite like the way that SANS run their classes. And I think the first good penetration testing class I did was the SANS GPEN, which is the network penetration testing and ethical hacking class. Not only because it was pretty technical. I mean, it wasn't the most technical class I've ever done in my life, but it was technical enough to make me sit up and think, okay, this is interesting stuff. But because they spent pretty much the entire first day talking about the organizational stuff, the stuff that I at that time had never even bothered thinking about, you know, how to conduct kickoff meetings, how to present accurate results, how to write reports, you know, how to communicate findings with people and analyze risk and things like that. And at that time, when I was starting, I was looking at things with such a technical vision that I wasn't really effectively communicating things. And that really, really taught me how to effectively communicate things. It really started me on the road to being a better penetration tester. You know, so, yeah, the SANS classes are good. Problem is, I'm the first to admit, they're not cheap. Yeah. They're pretty expensive. But for a six-day class, you get boot camp style classes where they run from 9 a.m. till 7 o'clock at night. Mm. They're pretty long. They're pretty they're pretty tough to get through. The exams, it's open book, so usually the exams aren't much of a problem. But you really learn a lot when you go in the classes, which is good. And I've also heard a lot of good things about the OSCP, the OFSEC guys. They do quite a lot of good stuff. I haven't had a chance to do their training, so I can't comment directly on it. But from what I've heard, their stuff is particularly good.
I see. So another source of probably input or learning things or getting to know about things or even getting just interested in things, I guess, where you would also have this part of people getting together and you being told interesting new details, exploits, whatever, I would say is conferences, which more and more pop up all over the world, some of them being pretty high class, restricted, expensive, some of them less expensive, more of a social community event. As you mentioned earlier, you've been to some US-based conferences this summer, and I'm not sure whether you listened into our stream last week, where we were discussing conferences that happened this summer are still up to happen within the next months. And unfortunately, we didn't have anyone on the stream who was at any of these US cons. So I'm wondering which ones were was it you were visiting?
Wow,
this year.
Big long list. I went starting at the beginning of the year. I went to ShmooCon over in Washington, which was fun. It was my first time over at ShmooCon, and it was during the snowpocalypse in Washington. So I was laughing at everyone else because everyone was saying, "Oh my God, look at how much snow there is!" I kind of looked out the window and went,
"A meter, right?"
Oh yeah, wow! I looked out the window and went, "Wow, it's kind of like a mild day in Austria." Then everyone was kind of. I was in a hotel 15 minutes down the road, and they were saying, "No, no one can leave." I'm only 15 minutes down the road. Yeah, it'll take you hours in this, this snow. Like, no, it won't. I'm fine. 20 minutes, I was back at the hotel. You know, my biggest problem was flying home because they tried to cancel all the flights. So, but ShmooCon was good, but it's a Washington con, which can be a bit of expense to get to. So, most of the ones over summer were PH Neutral, which you went to as well, which is a bit
not?
Like, yeah, it's a bit like. It's my first time there, so I think the best way to describe PH Neutral is a big party where some people talk about security occasionally.
Oh, wow. I'm pretty sure that FX would be super fond of this description.
It's like a big party and a security conference broke out. It's the complete anti-conference as far as I'm concerned, because it's the only time where we'd finish drinking just about in time to meet. You're just about in time to get there for the first talks of the next. So, you know, that was pretty good. And I really loved
the way. Probably just for our listeners, a little background info on PH Neutral. PH Neutral is mainly run by Fino Elite. If you're familiar with the name, or just Google it. I think this year has been the 8th year they've run this conference. There's only going to be 10 of these, actually, as far as I'm concerned. As far as I'm
nine public ones.
Nine public ones. One for very elected people. It's happening in Berlin every year. I think this is the last weekend of May, usually.
Sounds about right.
And yeah, this is like 3 days, one starting off with the keynote given by FX and a big party, what else? Then talks and a workshop this year as well. There was a DJing workshop, which I found hilarious. Like, you have this super, super elite security con, and then they're giving a DJ workshop.
It was great. That was my favorite part of the conference, because I used to be a DJ. I used to be a DJ on some pirate radio stations in London doing drum and bass music. It's been so long since I've played with turntables. It just drove me to want to come home and buy some Technic 1210s and a mixer. And
yeah. Did you?
Not yet. Still looking. If you know anyone who's selling some Technic 1210s, give me a shout.
Well, yes, then there's a party again at that night, and the next day is again talks, lightning talks as well this year, and going out partying again. But yeah, it's very much about, to me it feels, going there every year feels like, you know, you have like a family event where all the people you know and are fond of knowing of get together and have more or less party with also communicating about the knowledge they gained within this 1 year. More recent, whatever security issues that have been brought up, or just their work that they're doing.
What I liked about it was it was my first time, it's a sponsored event by some big companies like McAfee and Microsoft and things like that, but there's no signs, there's no selling, there's no vendors. You know, their idea of sponsoring that event is they will buy you drinks, and if you choose to talk about their products with them, then they're happy to talk about it. If not, they will still buy drinks.
And this is very awesome indeed, yeah.
It's so much of a friendly atmosphere as well. I mean, it's the problem is that everyone wants to come. I mean, if they let me in this year, then I'm sure that everyone wants to come. If they're letting me in, then anyone can get in nowadays. So it's not quite as exclusive as it used to be.
It's pretty much exclusive.
Oh, okay.
But yeah.
I'm looking
forward to that. Don't think so badly about yourself.
I always like putting myself down. That way other people can pick me back up.
People like, oh, what was that guy with starting with an L? Kind of forgot his name.
I don't know him. No.
Yeah. No, it really does. I think he's a very, very lead hacker, and we can leave it at that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah. Back to the other conferences. So that was pH neutral.
Yeah,
right?
That was pH neutral. I guess the next one was probably Vegas, which I've just got back from, which is B-Sides, Black Hat, and DEF CON. B-Sides
being... So I guess most people know about Black Hat, or have heard about it at least. If you're in this show, then probably. Well, if they're listening, then they should have. Most of them will know DEF CON. What is Security B-Sides?
Security B-Sides is... it's like a micro-conference, an unconference that's kind of sprung up. Originally, I believe it was planned as... The reason why it's called B-Sides is because there were so many people getting turned away from talking at Black Hat that people thought, well, this is stupid. I mean, these are some really, really good talks, some really, really professional people with great ideas and things to say are being turned away because there's not enough room for them to talk, or there's some political reason why they're not allowed to talk. But it's another matter. I don't do political crap. But so they formed Security B-Sides, which was meant to be kind of like a little micro-conference, more kind of hands-on. I think they were aiming for like 50 or 60 people, just kind of quick, you know, do your talk, be more interactive. I think the goal was to have everyone interacting. You know, no one is there purely to attend. Everyone is taking part in the conference. So
where did this happen?
It was in Las Vegas, about a 15-minute bus ride away from Caesar's Palace. But this year was, I think it's the second year now, slightly bigger than 50 people. I think they topped out at about 400 this year. And it was, I mean, I got a press pass for Black Hat and I didn't go. I just went to B-Sides because B-Sides was just excellent. I mean, you've got people like HD Moore, Egypt, Relic releasing the social engineering toolkit. You've got Digi Ninja talking about secure development life cycles and really kind of talking sense about that kind of stuff. Chris Nickerson doing stuff on social engineering and making, you know, business and penetration testers talk to each other, and it was every single talk that I went to there was just brilliant. It was so interactive, it was so personal, but it was also really, really technical as well. And it wasn't kind of like some person at the front, I'm going to give a talk for 45 minutes, at the end of it I'm going to say thanks and walk off. You know, if someone had a question, they just asked it. You know, halfway through through a slide, I've got a question on that, no problem, let's talk about that. And it was really interactive, and it really made everyone feel like they were part of the process and not just there to attend. And I really appreciated that. And I thought it was probably the best conference I've been to in the last year. So,
wow,
definitely worth going to. And it's really picked up. It's a real big craze now. You know, there's B-Sides conferences going on all over the US. Yeah. There's a B-Sides London being planned. And I'm hoping maybe next year, with your help and a few others, to kind of arrange some B-Sides action in Vienna.
That was what I was waiting for. There we go. Yeah. So B-Sides, yeah, all over the world.
All over the world, yeah.
If any of our listeners are anywhere near the next B-Sides conference, as we could call it, I guess. They call themselves a conference?
They used to call themselves an unconference, but I'm not sure that they're still using that terminology now.
So they should definitely drop by, anyone.
Definitely, don't just drop by. Jump on the website. If you go to if you search on Google for Security B-Sides, you'll find the website, and it's a wiki. You know, these things don't build themselves. If you don't take part and you're in the local area and you're not willing to help, then maybe it won't happen. You know, people are trying to make these things happen, but one person can't set up a conference. One person can have the idea, and one person can say we should do this, but it takes more than one person to get these things working. So, I mean, I said I'd like to do one in Vienna, but on my own, I couldn't do that. And, you know, if anyone's in and around Vienna and they want to help, then, you know, shoot me a mail and we'll try and sort things out. But I need other people's help, and other people in the US who are running their conferences in, you know, Denver and places like that, they need help as well. So if you're in the local area, take part. You'll get quite a lot out of it.
About the one you were planning, this is likely to happen within a range of just like 2 or 3 months, I think, in next summer. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's the plan. Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at, you know, kind of where it's going to be and things like that. It's just convenient that the first conference, the Forum of Incident Responders and Security Technicians, is, I believe, in June, and it's taking place in Vienna. So that's going to bring quite a large international crowd. Mm-hmm. So the question is whether or not it's worth doing something 2 days before that conference or 2 days after that conference, mm-hmm, to kind of attach to it. Because the good thing about it is Security B-Sides, you know, people who speak there don't get paid. No one pays entry to these things. It's all kind of sponsored. So B-Sides conferences don't pay speakers to fly in from the US. If they're already there for the first conference, then it's kind of... It's lucky, you know, they're there for the first conference. You can kind of attach a secondary thing to it and say, well, maybe just delay your flight back by 2 days and have some fun.
Right.
Come to our
I guess this is also the original idea behind Security B-Sides, right? Since
exactly.
All these people are at Black Hat, say, already, why not, you know, make
exactly.
use of them in some of the other way.
And it makes perfect sense, because first is a members-only conference where they talk about specific forensics incident handling, you know, CERT stuff. They have very little in penetration testing, and they're certainly people don't sit there and present zero-day exploits and things like that. So if you have something like that to present, first is probably not where you want to do it. But if you're already in town for first, stay an extra couple of days or come a couple of days early and, you know, do a presentation at B-Sides Vienna. I think we have to do it now. There's no way of backing out now.
I guess now it's too late. If it wasn't after your tweet, then it is now. Probably
get some good
just
spots.
Again, what email address could people contact you via if they wanted to get in touch?
Best thing to do is to send an email to contact@c22.cc.
Okay, awesome. I guess everyone can Google that as well anyway, and there's who is and everything. But yeah, just because we used to hear this on radio, aren't we? At least I am.
Yeah, not only that, but
you
to be honest,
spelling out URLs on the radio. Always an awesome thing to do. And gives you so much time.
And I do tend to protect my email address. So. No, it depends. If someone posts it on their website without my permission, then there's nothing I can do about it. But yeah, still.
So this was Security B-Sides. But right afterwards, like the very next day, happened what?
just as we were recovering from the awesome 303 party with Fonalit were playing as well, Mumpy was playing, and then DEF CON, which was, well, it's DEF CON. It's 10,000 people packed into a small casino that smells a little bit like old people. last year was my first year, and I honestly thought last year, wow, this place is just absolutely packed, and I got to see hardly any talks. And this year,
was even more packed.
found that it's even more packed, and I couldn't see anything. So yeah, it's kind of strange because living in Europe, it's strange for me that I know more people who are in the security industry in the US than I know who are in the security industry in Europe. You know, when I go to US conferences, I meet so many more people who I know than when I go to UK conferences, yeah, or come to Vienna or something. And I spent most of my time at DEF CON just talking to people, just kind of chatting and explaining things. There was
that
this
kind
whole
of reminds me of the Chaos Communication Congress conferences, where, you know, it's getting more packed every year, but then again, you end up talking to so many awesome people that this is the true value of the conference, not being one, yeah, of 1,000 sardines in one little lecture hall.
Like 3,000 people all crammed in to see Dan Kaminsky talk about DNS.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Skip that one. I'm actually talking about CCC. I'm actually probably going to miss it this year, so... which is kind of a shame, but the problem is that I found this last year, is that you go to so many, if you go to so many conferences, I went to Black Hat in Barcelona, I went to B-Sides in the US, DEF CON, I'm going to BrewCon, which is an excellent conference, everyone should go, BrewCon, yay, and maybe, I'm not sure yet, maybe I'm going to ExcaliburCon in China. By the time CCC rolls around in December, there's probably not that many talks that I haven't already seen in some way during the year. I mean, there's a couple of things, but last year I spent most of my time just hanging out in the lightning talks, looking at random things that people were presenting, and just talking to people, like you said. It's just kind of socializing between people, and that was a great experience, but it's kind of hard to explain to family and friends, sorry, I'm not going to be around between Christmas and New Year because I'm going to go and talk to random people who I can see other times during the year. It's interesting. It's great. I really, really want to go, but I'm going to save myself and probably end up going to the CCC camp next year because that's a must.
Yes, it definitely is.
That was my first.
Looking forward to that.
Yeah, that was my first hacker conference. Was the Chaos Computer Camp in 2008?
Mm-hmm.
2007. And I stayed with the Hackers on a Plane guys, and
the Americans again.
Yeah,
everywhere.
Well, I didn't know any German. I still don't know any German. But I didn't know any German, and I wanted to kind of hang with people who at least would speak the same language and, you know, help me to kind of acclimatize. And I wasn't in the industry. I had no job back then. I was jobless. So I was hanging with all these guys. No idea who anyone was. It was kind of randomly talking to people, and there was a guy who was explaining some really, really technical stuff that I didn't understand at all. And I said, oh, by the way, my name's Chris. Who are you? Oh, I'm Dan Kaminsky. He still doesn't remember my name. Doesn't matter how many times I introduce myself. But there were so many cool people there, and I didn't know any of them. And now I look back on my photos from CCC in 2007, and I'm like, wow, I know all these people. You know, I can talk to all these people, like Int 80 from Dual Core. And I've got pictures of him from 2007, and I didn't even know who he was then. And now I can talk to them, and I can send them messages on Twitter, and, you know, email them and say, you know, when are you coming over? You know, when are you at the next con? I'd love to catch your show. And it's just amazing how things move in this industry. And Twitter especially has been a great catalyst for me to be able to meet new people and talk to new people, because, you know, I've found it to be a great medium to be able to talk to people who are interested in stuff.
So, you know, since we didn't mention it yet, Chris, your handle on Twitter, of course, is Chris John Riley.
I was trying to come up with something witty. And because I couldn't, I came up with Chris John Riley. So, or at least people don't walk up to me and go, oh, you're D_10VW or something,
which
kind
would
of
have been
tricky.
Totally witty. But I guess it was registered already.
Yeah, that one was already registered, but yeah, it's it's the thing is, your handles and stuff like that, I've never really got into that, because as none of my friends, you know, were into the industry, it's like one person cannot give himself a handle. It's weak.
Probably so. Yeah. If only there was a hacker group back in London that you would have joined back in the days, then probably
I have
be called D_10VM now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I have this horrible tendency to only find out about hackers and groups and meetups shortly after I leave the country. It's like I found out about all of the ones in London after I left London and moved to Munich. After I left Munich and moved to Austria, I found out that there was the Troopers Conference and various other things going on in Munich that I'd never even heard of. And now I know people in Munich who I've never met, but I lived in Munich, and it's like, yeah, I should pay attention to my surroundings slightly more. So, but I'm pretty sure there's no hacker group in the Wood Quarter, because most people around here are farmers.
Probably this is a call out to people from that area right now.
If you're in the Wood Quarter and you want to set up a hackerspace, give me a shout. Because I'm in the middle of nowhere, and a hackerspace would be cool.
Uh-huh. Or you should probably come into Vienna more frequently to join the Metal Lab and our security by candlelight sessions.
Yeah. Well, I'd love to. I came to the last one. That was cool. And plus, I came to NinjaCon, which should be called PlumberCon.
No, it's called
NinjaCon. Fuck you, Nintendo. Sorry, did you have to cut that one? What I meant to say was, fuck you, Nintendo. I won't ask you about that, because that's all kind of legally stuff, and I know you're not really...
Yeah, I'm really not into the legal things.
No. But no. Plus, NinjaCon is great, because Jason stole my badge.
Oh, I have one for you. You gotta... Yeah, we should catch up in Vienna at some point.
Yeah, definitely. What I try and do is I try and arrange to come down and do presentations when I've... You know, it's like, I need to do a presentation, no problem. I'll come down on this day, because there's something going on at MetaLab. And always the people I'm trying to arrange meetings with turn around and say, can you do it the next day? It's like, oh, tip. It's like always the wrong day for me. And I turn up and there's nothing going on. You know, and
yourself should change that.
I should change it. I just tell them I'm coming down on this day, and if you're not there, I'm presenting it.
Right.
Even if you're not in the room.
Thinking of was, if you're at the MetaLab on the wrong day, you should change it. There's nothing happening. You should be
screwed
just
by candlelight.
Okay, lightning talks now.
Yeah. Anyone got lightning talk? No. Okay. Well.
So I think we're running short on time.
Wow, I really do talk a lot, don't I?
Yeah, that was kind of an hour. I was thinking of, you know, cutting in some music in the end, but maybe I'm not going to be able to do that.
Well, it depends what kind of music you're going to cut in. Because if it's anything good, I'll hang up now. It's fine.
No, better not. You know, there's a stream playing all night long and all day and all the time with all completely CC music. So I'm sure people get to hear enough music all day anyway, if they're listening to the stream anyways. There is one more thing, Chris, that I was instructed to ask you about.
Sounds ominous.
Yes, well, it comes from Fish, a lovely... host of the Hackerspaces Hour.
This is about cheese, isn't it?
It is about cheese. He's asking about the cheese.
I'm sorry, Fish. I've forgotten your cheese. It's in a fridge at Vixoika. Yeah. And I'm pretty sure that they've eaten it by now, which is
that sounds a pity. So sad. Probably you should just ask them next time you're in Vienna.
Yeah.
I'm not sure they would have just eaten some random cheese.
Oh, I'm sure they would have. I mean, I would have. It looked like a very tasty cheese to me. just a little background story. At NinjaCon, Fish was kind enough to bring me some cheese. I have absolutely no idea what prompted him to bring me cheese, but he did.
Well, probably the country he's from.
Yeah, there is that. Yeah. But you do realize they also
I'm
just saying. They do porn and other interesting stuff in the Netherlands. And he brought
tasty stuff is what you actually wanted to say,
yeah.
Right?
That's what So he could have bought anything, but he bought cheese, which is good. And it looked really, really tasty. And I put it in the fridge because I didn't want it to go off before I went home. And then I went home.
Oh.
Which is a pity.
Yeah, I'm getting really sentimental at this point.
Well, if you're in the area... Feel free to pop by and ask them if they have cheese.
I'll check on your cheese, yeah.
That would be great. When are the videos coming out for NinjaCon anyway? Because
I think the time is over now. Well, they are on tape at Peppy's place, and I have seen him putting up his own video yet. I'm not sure how the proceedings are with the rest of the videos that he has.
I just wanted to make sure. I thought for a horrible moment that the camera that I lent you didn't work, and
not this time around. So that was the issue we had last year. This year, this should be all fine because his talk turned out to be perfect. So.
Yeah, well, his talk was really, really good as well because
it was so funny.
How not to do a presentation. Yeah, it was. Yeah, I'm going to take pointers from that because I need to do a lightning talk at BrewCon. Rumors are I'm going to be dressed as a pimp. I'm not quite sure where that came from. Someone kind of said something about dressing up in fancy dress, and I said, if you hire a pimp outfit, I'll wear it. And someone apparently.
Interesting. So is BrewCon going the way of booth boys now as well?
Booth boys, that's the way, yeah. Fat, ugly, English, bald booth boys.
I was rather thinking of, you know, shiny dressed, cute little booth boys, but
however
you want to put it. That's...
Yeah. Are you coming to BrewCon?
I'm not sure yet. Actually, I've been asked about this last week at the show as well. I'm not sure I can make it just because of work I get to do here and whether I can take off or not. Still in question.
That's terrible.
I know. But I've been there last year, and there's always next year, just like with Congress.
But you missed Black Hat and DEF CON as well. You were meant to come over to DEF CON.
I know. I just made up my mind, like, not even 48 hours before my flight, and I was like, I'm not going to fly.
That's bad.
Which is something we can talk about in private, but not on the show. Will definitely, the very, very most definite conference I'll be at next is DeepSec in Vienna. Cool. That's going to be on in the end of November.
I'd love to attend. Depends. If I can get a press pass, I will be there. If not, then
you should shoot me an email.
Try and get Crash. Yeah, I'll shoot you an email. Yeah.
And we'll see what we will do about the press pass. Okay, so if anyone else needs a press pass or wants to dedicate their work and effort and everything to DeepSec, then you can shoot me an email as well. And we'll see how many helping hands we still need.
Great.
Okay.
Well, I look forward to it. Thank you very much for letting me come on the show and ramble on for an hour about nothing in particular.
Oh, that was actually pretty awesome, and I would love to have you on the show some point in time again, probably even in person in the studio.
Next time I'm in Vienna, we'll do lunch. I think that's what the business type people say. We'll do lunch.
Well, I will try to be mentally prepared to do something that business-like. We'll see about that. Maybe we'll just do beers and ramble about how pH neutral should not stop being pH neutral.
Ever.
Within only just 2 years. This is a really sad ending, the cheese and the only 10 pH neutral thing. Well, I'm sure we can make it up with some happy music right now, as Kern is, I think, on the mixer, and we'll happily DJ you for the night. Chris, thank you so much again, and have a great evening. And I'll see you very soon at the Metal Lab, I hope.
Brilliant. Thank you very much for having me on. And it was a pleasure.
It was a pleasure for me, too. Okay. For all the listeners, thanks for listening in. This was Room IOI, as in Information and Intelligence. And this stream is being sent to you from Vienna and will be sent from now on every month, I hope, or every 4 weeks, that is. And I'll wish you a very nice night and good night. Bye-bye.